Good afternoon to everyone. Thank you for joining me for today's weekly update. I have a number of different areas to talk about, and I did want to recognize Dr. Jose Romero, Secretary of Health still, we haven't switched, with me, as well as Johnny Key, Secretary of Education. We've got Mark Wyatt, our deputy over at Human Services, so thank you for joining us as well. And we always have Colonel Ader here as well, who does a great job getting our vaccinations out. First, let me give you a rental assistance update. We talked about that last week, and there's been some questions arisen on that. And last week, I directed Department of Human Services to review the assistant program and to simplify the process of documentation. And so I've approved two big changes. First of all, the applications from those that have received eviction notices will be prioritized. If they have any risk of eviction, they can document that, then they're going to be prioritized. Right now, we have 2,800 applicants that are in this position. Of those, over 1,300 will be paid by next week and their applications processed. The second change is that funds can be paid to eligible tenants even if the landlord does not submit the required information. This is a change in policy. This allows the assistance to be provided even if the landlord is not cooperative. We are giving the landlord time to respond. We're giving them notifications, but there's a time limit on that, and if they don't respond within 10 days, then the assistance can be provided directly to the tenant. This will impact about 6,000 applicants who've been waiting for landlord application. And you can see here, this is an update from last week, and then we've had 15,000 applications. We've assisted 3,200. We've given out 9.8 million assistance, which is up, of course, from last week. We've only denied 97 households. We have these in process, 2,800. The 8,900 that's waiting information, of those, that's about 6,000 who've been waiting on the landlord documentation. So this change in policy should greatly assist getting the funds out if the tenant can provide the right information. In addition to those policy changes, we've also increase the staffing levels for this program. We have a contractor that is contracted to assist us in managing this effort, and they have added 70 additional staff to processing the applications and to overseeing the program. That brings the total number of support personnel for this initiative to 160, and that includes the outreach and education that we're emphasizing to landlords, community-based organization, and to attorneys to get the word out on this effort. Two other points should be made. There are three most populous counties, Washington County, Benton, and Pulaski. They are all outside of the state effort on providing the rent relief. They have received direct funding to those three most populous counties, and so they're managing their own program for rent relief. And so, and that's about one-third of our population. And so that's important to keep in mind, that more assistance has been given out through those county efforts than simply what is reflected in the state. Another point I would make is that we have $173 million at the state. If all 15,000 applications are processed and approved, that totals less than $40 million. That still leaves us with $143 million. So under any test that Washington wants to give, we're not going to spend $173 million. Our economy is moving. People have opportunities to work. We want to get them back. We want to provide this rental assistance, but that's a lot of money that's in the pot right now, and we want to get these that are the applications processed as quickly as possible, and I think this will help us to get that done. And now let me go to a couple other topics. First of all, in the hospital update, the ICU bed availability as of 10 a.m. this morning is that we have 23 ICU beds available statewide. This includes both COVID and general ICU, but we do know that we have at least 10 COVID ICU beds that are available because those are funded by ARPA and designated for that purpose. In addition, we have two pediatric ICU beds available. That's closer than we like, but it is better than what it has been. And so we continue to monitor that. And the important news also is that because of General Assembly supporting the funding and our request for funding, we will have 27 new ICU beds coming online in September. So we are trying to get ahead of the curve. If there is a curve that goes up, hopefully it goes down. But we want to bring on new beds in September to meet any additional needs that will be out there. And I want to thank again all the hospitals that have worked so hard on bringing these new bed spaces on, from Baptist to Jefferson Regional Medical Center, CHI St. Vincent, St. Bernard's, Unity Health, all have been great partners in bringing these additional beds online. Finally, before I get to the case report, I am pleased to announce that pursuant to my request through Adam, we will be receiving a 20-person medical military team for the Department of Defense that will be sent to UAMS to assist with staffing needs. This consists of 14 nurses, 4 of those are critical care, 4 physicians, and 2 respiratory therapists. This is welcome assistance that will come, and this will add to the staffing capacity at UAMS that will help us to increase our capacity for managing both COVID and non-COVID emergencies and health needs that are out there. So with that, let me go to today's case report. And as you can see, we have 2,181 new cases, and this is down from 28. All right, let me continue through this, if I might, at this time. I think we're good. As I mentioned, we have 2,181 new cases over the last 24 hours. That is down from 2,800 that we had a week ago. Our active cases are down. The sad news, of course, is that we had 34 new deaths. And so when we have high numbers of cases, high number of unvaccinated population, then that is a result of that with this Delta variant. The doses of vaccines are down a little bit, 7,717. We hope that that will go back up to where we have been before. And the hospitalizations are down 19 and one less on ventilator. You can see that information for yourself. I'm going to go through these other slides fairly quickly, but they're still important to put it in perspective. You see our 7-day rolling average of confirmed and probable cases, flat, a little bit down. That's great news for us. Next one, we see the hospitalizations down on the right trend for COVID patients. And then you'll see the number of active cases also is on the decline. And then we'll see what I like to show, which is the vaccination status of cases on the left, hospitalizations in the middle, and deaths on the right. And so of those that are of the cases, 90% have not been fully vaccinated. The middle is a hospitalizations, 91.5% of those hospitalized have not been fully vaccinated. And then on the deaths, you can see 90% has not been fully vaccinated. That tells the story of your vaccinations gives you a safer bet in terms of not getting COVID, not going to the hospital, and not dying. The proportion of Arkansas residents that have received that 12 plus that have received the vaccination, and this is the eligible population, you combine those two, fully vaccinated, partially vaccinated, It's at 61.7%. So that is moving up, 12 plus population. And if you look at the adult population, of course, that's even higher. And then on our positivity rate, you see that's also some good news. I asked Dr. Romero when we're going to get below the 10% positivity rate, and he said hopefully soon. But we're right now trending in the right direction. And this one, I'm going to ask Dr. Romero to come and do you want to wait on this, Dr. Romero? Okay, Dr. Sima, you stand on the ready here. But this is, I asked the Department of Health to take a look at this. They have all 100% of the data in terms of their cases and in the schools. And so, Dr. Sim, I think I will let you come up here and talk about this. You prepared this slide. Talk about what the data shows in terms of mask policy and no mask policy. Come on. So just for everybody, the on the left, to me, that's orange. It's no mask policy. On the middle is partial mask policy. And on the right is a full mask policy. Dr. Sima.
Yes, thank you, Governor. So as the Governor mentioned, we do have information on all of our school districts with regard to the number of cases being diagnosed in that setting, as well as the staff and faculty. So looking at the first 3 weeks of school, we're looking at the impact that masking policies have on the incidence rate among our students and faculty and staff. So these are crude rates. These are not adjusted for any characteristics, but we are looking into that. We are developing a complex statistical model in which we will take into account different characteristics within the school district community level, which could include vaccination rates, community transmission outside of the school, and so on and so forth. Any of those characteristics which may influence or otherwise confound a relationship between mask policies and the incidence rates of COVID-19 in our schools. Thank you.
Thank you. And now, Secretary Key, if you would talk about the education report.
Thank you, Governor. I want to go over some preliminary numbers this today from this school year. Now, these numbers will not really be final numbers until we get closer to October 1st, but preliminarily, we are at about 470,000 students enrolled in our K-12 system in the state of Arkansas, which is consistent with where we were last year. Likewise, often the question came up last year about the number of homeschool students. And last year we did see an increase in homeschool students. This year we are seeing a steady number compared to last year. We are right around 24,000 students who are registered to be homeschooled. And I would remind you that that number can change over the course of the year, but that's where we are right now. We have, as has been publicly reported, we have three districts that have been impacted and have shifted to virtual learning this week. Two were district-wide adjustments. Western Yale County and Lafayette County school districts, their entire districts have shifted in their delivery. Rogers School District had one elementary school, Northside Elementary, that made a shift. What we are seeing in the districts, especially those districts that are having more challenges, are typically lower vaccination rates. With the staff, especially the staff, our numbers, as has been reported by the health department, of in-school cases are higher this year than they were last year, which is to be expected with the Delta variant. However, the number of interruptions has not been as frequent this year because of the vaccine being available now, and in many of our districts we have a sizable percentage of staff that have been vaccinated. What happens is last year, because of staff quarantines or staff positive cases, school could not continue. In these districts that we're talking about, especially these smaller districts, that has been the challenge, the unavailability of staff due to positive cases or due to quarantines. We have three, and I'll finish with this, we have three vaccine clinics this weekend coming up in our third week of Friday night football clinics. There will be clinics in Warren, in McGee, and Lone Oak. And anyone in those communities or in the visiting communities for those football games, if they would like to get vaccinated, we will have staff there available for that to happen. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Johnny. And with that, we'll take any questions. Is there anyone remotely that want to?
Me, Michael Wilson with 5 News in Northwest Arkansas. And we just kind of talked about schools again. So just seeing, I mean, we had several schools in our area that are in the top 5 in most cases. What are we doing to combat that, or any guidance that you have for schools to lower that rate?
Well, first of all, make sure that they have vaccination clinics, that they have a good educational material for both the parents and the students and the staff. The key is increasing vaccination rates for those that are 12 and under. I've advocated for the schools to have the option to require masks, and I know that they've had varying decisions made, but clearly from the data, that is a protective measure that has a positive impact on the number of cases. Then finally, it's about ventilation, it's about what's outdoors, it's about the other protective measures that you take. And I think the schools are doing a good job on that, managing it this year, but the Delta variant is a little bit tougher to deal with than what we've had before. So we'll continue to press on, but those are the key things that we can do. And of course, the Department of Health stands ready to help any school that needs additional assistance. Yes, ma'am.
State funding?
No, this is just state policy. And so that applies to our rental assistance program at the state level. Each of the counties will be making their own decisions as to how they get that relief out, what type of program. We are offering assistance to them in terms of helping to coordinate, but that's part of, they get their own channel of money and they set their own rules.
And just to follow up, their funds, it seems like, are, you know, with the amount of applications they have left, would be more than the funds they have available. Would they be able to utilize state funds once that runs out?
I have Mark White here. I'm going to call Mark here and ask him to answer that question.
Thank you, Governor. Yes, we have been in regular communication with those counties, and to the extent they have additional funding needs, we're ready and willing to work with those counties to begin accepting applications, provide funding, so that we ensure that those needs are met in those counties. And that's, as I said, it's an ongoing discussion with each of the counties.
Governor, I know that the message from yourself, Dr. Romero, and a bunch of other officials is that the vaccine, the COVID vaccine, is the way we're going to beat this surge and beat the pandemic in general. However, yesterday during a joint committee meeting, Representative Mary Bentley said, and I quote, "Vaccines are not the answer. We're hearing from health officials that vaccines are not going to get us where we need to be." Is that concerning to you to have these mixed messages from state leaders?
Well, I could not disagree more with how Representative Bentley has articulated that issue. Vaccines are what every medical profession says we need to follow. We've worked hard as a country from President Trump having Operation Warp Speed, getting the vaccines out in record time, to seeing how it has saved lives and reduced hospitalizations as the data shows. So it is important to make sure people have the right information, and I do hope that the data that we present is helpful to make sure they understand how vaccines are the way out. It's about individual responsibility, and everybody has an individual decision. We also do have a responsibility to our community, and whether it's been smallpox or other communicable diseases, we've always looked at the good of the community as well, and high vaccination rates is what has got us through those different episodes in history. And that's what we're asking everybody to do, is to act for their own health interests, but also for the good of the community. Was there any other question remotely? All right.
Governor?
Yes.
This is, This is Andrew with AP. This is a question for Dr. Romero. Wanted to ask again about the issue of ivermectin. American Medical Association last week had put out a statement calling for the immediate end of its use for treating COVID. Wanted to see, is there any thought being given to the state expanding or strengthening its warning against using it to, I know the warning had been about the veterinary form, expanding it to include ivermectin using the human form as well to treat COVID?
Yes, thank you for that question. So the Arkansas Department of Health does not regulate the practice of medicine. That is up to the medical board. Our stance in the health department is not to use veterinary grade ivermectin. Ivermectin is used and FDA approved for treatment of parasitic diseases and certain infestations. Within the scope of practice of each individual physician, they may use a drug off-label, and that is up to the physician and the patient. We are not endorsing the use of ivermectin for the treatment of COVID. It is not FDA approved for that, but we stop at that because that is an individual practice decision. And I'll take this opportunity, as I did last week, to say that what works are monoclonal antibodies, not anything else. Monoclonal antibodies have been shown to decrease hospitalization by 70% to 85% if started early and given appropriately. That is what patients should be asking for, not ivermectin, not any other compound. They work. Monoclonal antibodies do work. Thank you, Governor.
Anything else?
Governor?
Yes.
This is Brandon Evans with 4029 News. I wanted to see if we could get some more details about the 20-person medical military that are coming to UAMS. When are they coming? How long will they be here? How much did it cost? And kind of give us an overview of what they're doing.
Thank you. And the answer is they should be here tomorrow. They'll be here for a 30-day tour, and that can be extended, but they're a 30-day commitment. And then that is at no cost to the state. In terms of their responsibility, they will be blended in with the existing staff at UAMS. Of course, 4 critical care nurses, 8 med-surg nurses, and 2 emergency medicine nurses. As I mentioned, 4 physicians, 1's emergency medicine, 1 critical care, and 2 hospital medicine, and 2 respiratory therapists. So that is a lot of medical capability that will be blended in with the existing staff, and that will create greater capacity. At this time, I couldn't give you a certain number of beds that will create, but we have, UAMS is receiving patients from across the state, and it costs precious time if they have to be diverted to another hospital that we might have an empty bed in. And so just by creating additional capacity at UAMS should be really helpful to our outlying areas that are bringing patients in and normally served by UAMS. All right, with that, thank you very much today, and we will see you soon.